put it this way. If you ever had to fight anyone for real, you wouldn't say anything. You would just do it. And that's that. And if you're already arguing about it, just walk away.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
What is Chad like as a director? And like, what are some things that I guess you've taken away from watching him with like 8711 and the team over there? And are there any stories that have impacted you, working with him?
Yeah. So, you know, to kind of briefly go over my first impression with him is in like 2012 of January, we had already released Loco out the following year, you know, like late fall. I think it was November mm-hmm. when we released it. And in January, I'd gotten a call from Jackson Spidell, who most people know as the Captain America double and obviously the Keanu double for John Wick. And he just fight coordinated Tenet. So he had contacted me at that time and was like, hey, you know, my boss Chad, I don't know if you've heard of him, but we're doing this project and, you know, I've seen a short of yours. And if you're interested, why don't you come on out for like 2 weeks? And mind you, it's not like he's going, we will pay for this, we will do that. He's just like, yo, if you're free. And I'm like, well, I'm in Chicago. And he's like, well, if you're free, you know, like, you know, if you can come out, it'd be great. If not, no worries. I totally understand. And in the entertainment business, if you don't know, getting those kinds of calls are kind of like, not the kiss of death, but it's very much like, if you don't take it, more than likely, you will never get that ever again in that sense.
Oh yeah. Once in a lifetime chance.
Well, because it's like, you know, I knew who 8711 was, and obviously I'd seen even at that time some of their vizzes online and just kind of happenstance, or through like talking with Sam Hargrave, you know, he would show me like some of the work they were doing, and I was like, wow, that's amazing, you know, seeing these previzzes compared to a lot of the final products, or at least seeing the emphasis of it. Right. So to me, working with those guys is much more like, one day maybe, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
20 years, you know, like I would never dream of being contacted. So when I had gotten contacted, I was working retail and, you know, my wife was the one that was very much like, just take the opportunity and just figure it out, you know, just try it. So I did. And Vlad was very gracious to let me stay with him. And so when I met with Chad at the time, they were doing a project that never came to fruition, but it was like a Snow White-esque project for Disney. And they were going to use the technology, I believe, for Tron at the time they had just done. And wow. Wu Ping was going to direct it and Chad was going to coordinate it. So it was very much like a Matrix kind of reunion of sorts.
Yeah.
But, you know, Chad was like, yeah, if you want to just watch, you can watch and just chill. And or, you know, you can come in the next day and we're here at like 5 a.m. every day till like 5 p.m. You know, whatever you want to do. And so, of course, the next day I was there at like 4 a.m. at the facility for the next 2 weeks. And so we prepped this project for 2 weeks. And then I worked for about 3 days doing mocap. And, you know, Chad was running it at the time. And, you know, at the time I'd heard good and bad things about Chad in the sense of like, oh, you know, he's very articulate and astute and he's very particular about what he likes. But then the bad was like, oh, he's going to be on your ass and he's going to do this. And, you know, he's really hard. He definitely will call you out if you do bullshit. And
yeah.
But at the time I was like, well, I mean, I don't know. Like that's what I expected from a stunt coordinator in the sense of like, if you're working on a big budget thing, there's no time to BS, you know, there's no time
to be play critical. Around.
Totally. You know, they're trying to figure out what they need to do for production. And so when I worked with him, I honestly would say he was no harder than a lot of the martial arts teachers that I had. He was definitely strict. He was definitely hard. But he would at least tell you why, or he would at least guide you to think, why do you think this is not right? You know, I'm giving you the option to fix it.
Okay.
Here may be some potentials, but it's on you to do it, right? So I was very much like, oh, this is kind of what I've been hoping for is like...
Oh, sorry, you cut out for a second, like the last 5 seconds.
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying, Chad is very much like, he'll explain to you why you're doing something wrong and he'll give you options to pursue it, but really it's on you to pursue those options. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to sit there and baby you, but he's also not going to let you sink or swim kind of thing. It's very much like, hey, this is why you did this wrong. This is why you should be doing it this way. Give it another try, you know, and then you have to go out there and get after it. And it made sense because I'm like, okay,
kind of this is a thing a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, you know why you're here. You know why I've called you. You have a potential. Let me see the potential, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not malicious. It's very literal. It's like, you are here to show me what you are capable of. If you are as good as you say you are, you will show it in your action, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what he told me. You know, he's like, I think you look good. I saw your reel. I think it's pretty good. The team has to feel that as you perform. You know, like, I may think you're great, but if the team tells me you're a dick, well, there you go. You know, like, don't just please me, please everyone. Everyone has to be on your side. And it's true. And I think that's why that team is one of the premier action design teams that are out there. And Chad is a professor. He's meticulous. He has that very Hong Kong approach where he'll break down a scene, come in, show you exactly why you didn't do it right, perform it, and show it to you. And then be like, do it that way and go back. And it's crazy because we were doing these big group fights where we had like 30 people against one person. He let us all finish, you know, we would do masters of like 30 to 50 moves, sometimes 70 moves. And then he would finish, you know, call cut and then point out whoever and be like, you over here, this section there, this, you see, no, on the fifth one, that's where you did it wrong. It needs to be the other way. You're doing a ridge hand this way. Why would you do that? Go back and do And you're like, oh, okay. But again, that showed me like, that's why he's at the top. That's why he's such a premier coordinator, because he cares about not just the aesthetic of the movement, but why it counts like a conductor, right? Why are we bridging and apexing to this moment? This is why. We're trying to show the audience and these people this, you know? This is why this is important. If you gloss it over, you'll lose them. And so I'm like, okay, being around someone like that really, really helped, I guess, like being an indie guy and kind of doing it on my own, it really solidified what I was doing was the right approach. Because I even asked Chad, you know, we had a big long talk. Vlad was actually there with me because Chad had asked who did the short. And I was like, well, it's Vlad's direction, but you know, I was just very lucky to be the lead. So at the time we talked to Vlad and myself and you know, just really he told us and broke us down like the differences between a coordinator, a second unit director, a fight coordinator, things like that. And I had asked him, I was like, well, you know, I need to go back to Chicago because my wife is finishing her master's at the time. And obviously I had gotten AFTRA, but I wasn't SAG yet at the time. And so I was like, you know, I need to eventually get into SAG. And he's like, well, once you figure that out, you know, it's up to you. Do you want to make money and go to like a hub, like a New York or at the time it was Louisiana, not Atlanta, but New Orleans? Or do you want to come to LA and it's going to be a grind, but do you want to make a career? You know, because you can make money and make a lot of money doing stunts, or you can make a career and learn from the ground up. You know, and I was like, well, I'd like to learn from the ground up. So he's like, yeah, when you're in Chicago, just keep doing what you're doing. He's like, but don't stop working with your friends, but don't rely on them. Like, start working with people, again, kind of going back to the theater thing, people that don't have the martial arts background, that aren't martial arts nerds, that aren't even always stunt people. If they are stunt people, you know, take a driver, take someone who does only high falls or water stuff and make a fight with them, make it work. You know, try to really present the character, not just stunt techniques and things like that, you know, really go above and beyond and try to tell the story with this person who, you know, already has limited skills. And he had told both of us a story with Wu Ping when he was in Hong Kong, just after the Matrix one, I believe.
Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah.
And, yeah. He had told the story where he was stoked to do a viz with those guys and he was actually going to run it. And then Wu Ping was like, I'm going to pick the guys for you. And then it was Wu Ping's two office secretaries, you know, at the front desk. And, you know, these two Chinese women were 60 years old, and Chad was like, what are you talking about? You know, but Wu Ping's like, why do you think I get hired in America to do what I do? You think it's because I'm the best kung fu person or the best martial arts choreographer? He's like, no, it's because I can make anybody look good. So he's like, if you want to show me, you need to be able to make these women look good, you know?
Does that just mean like from a cinematography perspective, or does that mean from like a choreography perspective, like just refining that?
Both, actually. Okay. Yeah, because that's kind of like what we were talking about in the beginning, right? Like the emphasis of showing either literal or like fantastical martial arts technique. But then if you want the audience to care about that, you need to present it, not just cinematically, but from a character, from intention. They need to feel what that motion is, so you get behind that character. So now it's like a two-way, a two-pronged attack. You're like, oh man, that technique looked cool, and the person looked badass, or I really felt that person's emotion, you know, behind it. And it makes sense. It's like, that's how you create what we call, you know, in our business, moments and things like that. Like those are the moments you, in cinema. It's not the idea of that technique. It's just literally that moment you saw everything come together, right? It's like Bruce doing a sidekick to someone, you know, like Bruce having the counters, you know, Jackie doing a sequence with something and then backing off, and then he shows the pain, you know, like the moments where it's just you feel
emotional pain, like you said. Yeah,
exactly. You know, so yeah, I would say being around him, and he's a Chad's a very interesting man. Let me put it that way. But he's always been very gracious to everyone that's there. He's just very upfront and straightforward. And a few times that I've been able to just talk to him or pick his brain, you know, he's been always very much like, stay open, keep training. You know, he'd always sometimes ask me, he's like, are you shooting your little things in the woods? And I'm like, yeah, I'm still shooting, sir. And he's like, great. Keep doing that. Maybe try this. I don't know. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Thanks, sir.
Keep it practicing.
But yeah, he was very much a proponent of, if you're going to do what sticks for you, fine, but you better be the best at it. You better be willing to find every in and out of what's expected, so that you have options when you're finally up, you know, at the plate. All right, here's your shot. You know, don't fuck it up. That's what he always say. Go for it. Don't fuck it up.
Good advice. Good advice.
Yeah. I'm definitely seeing a lot of similarities, actually. When Scott Adkins was talking about Yuen Wu Ping and how he was like directing him, and like, I think I definitely see similarities there between Yuen Wu Ping and Chad.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that. Yeah.
Yeah, man. And Chad too, you know, even with his brain, he's got such a cinematic brain. He's a big martial arts nerd, you know, as much as people may not like always believe it when they meet him initially, because he's kind of very, like I said, straightforward and sometimes a little cold, but he's super gracious. He just, again, reminds me of any atypical martial arts sensei or master that you see. Definitely. It's like he has so much martial arts knowledge. And I think what was also really cool to learn from him is kind of like what we spoke about, the practical and the cinematic application. He would show you practical applications, practical drills, and then go, okay, how would we change this? How would you change this for the cinema? Because maybe someone cannot follow the drill literally, or if they follow the drill literally, how do you not make it feel like a drill? Right?
Yeah.
What are the things and moments you can put in there? Keeping the same, let's say, even tempo or amount of technique, what can you add in there? Beats wise or within the rhythm, that will feel emotional, that will feel intentional. So that way, all of a sudden, they're not seeing a drill anymore. But that would be the cool thing, is he wouldn't necessarily give you the answer. He would present it to you for you to go and pursue it. Or he'd give you the idea of a base answer and then be like, here's a start. Now go figure it out, you know? And I thought that was really super cool to see from a coordinator. There's not many other coordinators that I would say that I've kind of learned a similar style from. He was definitely someone that was willing to break it down and also give you the doorway to, you know, go and pursue it yourself and go and see, you know, what work you're doing.
Yeah. I think We kind of want to jump into Logan. That was a big topic that we kind of wanted to cover. But I don't think we could jump into Logan without talking about Garrett, actually, who right. will actually be interviewing next.
Oh, right.
Right after, yeah. Awesome. So, yeah, anything you can give us about Garrett would be awesome.
I mean, you know, his filmography speaks for itself, obviously. Mm-hmm. Garrett's worked with some of the top, absolutely. Obviously, he's on Avatar right now. And Garrett actually gave me my first major job instance, you know, like a first feature film run, because I had got contacted by J.J. Perry, who's a great mentor of mine. And from there, he was working under Garrett Warren. We did a film in Chicago called Divergent. And on Divergent, I mean, you know, Garrett threw me into the deep end. But I really take every time I worked for Garrett, he throws me in the deep end in the sense of like, here is the scope of what we need to accomplish. I'm entrusting you to, you know, help me accomplish this, but it's not going to be easy. You know, there's going to be a lot of factors we have to consider, but this is why you're here. So good luck. You know, like he's kind of similar to Chad in that sense. He has a very strict martial arts style. But what's great about Garrett, I would say, compared to any other coordinator, is Garrett is so much about emotional content and emotional intention, you know, within any sequence he designs. It's much, much less about technique, you know, like, whereas let's say Chad is very much about the look of the technique as well as the emotional content behind it. I would say Garrett reigns more on emotion, you know, like sometimes it's okay if it's dirty because it feels real, right? It's okay if it's not exact because in that moment, it might not be exact, you know, and that is okay. And on Logan, for example, that was the last time that I worked for Garrett for a while. He was so big about, because Mangold was so big about creating, you know, this Western world for this character. Yeah. And it's not a superhero film. So Garrett very much was challenging myself and the assistant coordinator and choreographer, Steve Brown, is a good friend of mine. He was really challenging us to find what's the basis for this character at this time, right? Going through all these wars and on his body, he's slowly dying. So like, how does he compare at these moments in the film, then meeting X-23, and then at the end meeting X-24, you know, it's like, how do you show this journey through this guy who's in a way seen it all, right? He's an old gunslinger, but at the same time is just tired. He's tired of everything. So how do we show that? His bravado. How do we show sometimes the fear and doubt because he is older and being poisoned? And even times where we think of like brutal ways to kill people or do things, he's like, that's great. How do we not blow up the VFX budget? You know, like it's wonderful. How do we do that for real? You know, which is again a challenge because I feel like in today's society, it is smart to rely on visual effects. But what's harder is to almost rely on the old school techniques of in camera effects and why it's important to go that way, why it's important to trick the audience as much as possible with an illusion before you show them, you know, the big grandiose effect. Because then you'll have lost them, right? You'll have lost the sense of realism or you've lost the illusion will feel like an illusion as opposed to like, well, how'd you do that? You know, is that real? So I really respect that Garrett is so big about that. And I think that speaks to his, again, his experiences working under people like Zemeckis, Peter Jackson, obviously James Cameron, Spielberg.
Very old school though. Yeah.
Really, really old school. So he's, again, him too, he's definitely taught me a lot. He's like one of the guys that I would say can do it all. You know, he knows how to shoot and edit. He knows how to, you know, design and choreograph action. He knows how to work around all the VFX stuff. And yeah, he's a, like Chad, he's a one man show. For sure. He can do it all.
Jack of all trades, man.
What exactly was your role for Logan specifically?
So I was brought in to assist Steve. So I was basically part of the fight team. And I was running the stunt previs aspect, the prep aspect with Steve. A lot of times I would mainly shoot it. Sometimes Steve would take over. Sometimes Garrett, a couple other people, depending on you know what was going on. We had so many things to do and prep at a time. And then I was tasked with Steve to edit, obviously, all the vizzes and present. And that was really it. It was just kind of preparing them and going through it all. You know, obviously Steve was in charge of mainly coordinating the fight team and choreographing and training Hugh and things like that. And the other actors, Daphne Keene, of course. And so once they kind of got through to everything, I was really there on the back end to help with design and, you know, overall action design, but mainly fight design, you know, just giving a basis for the character to present to Hugh and everybody else to see if it stuck or not. And we prepped for about, I want to say like a month, maybe two in LA. And then we prepped for another month in New Orleans. And then they started shooting from there. I think after that first month and a half in New Orleans, I took a break from the production. And then I came back when for like a week or so when they were in Albuquerque, New Mexico, doing the refinery scene. And then they eventually went to Chama to do all the forest scenes and things like that. So I was brought back to help them with the finale and, you know, just kind of help with some loose editing for the opening fight, of the film. And yeah, just, you know, again, very gracious to Garrett and Steve for that opportunity. And we had actually, I worked for Garrett just before that on X-Men Apocalypse with Steve Brown, because we did the opening scene in that film. And Steve and I designed that scene for Garrett. And then Garrett went to do it with Steve in, I believe, Vancouver. I forgot where in Canada. But that scene helped Garrett, you know, get the job for Logan, because I believe someone at Fox, you know, had seen the scenes that he had done. And they were like, yeah, you know, James Mangold is looking to do Logan, and he wants to go a completely different direction than he did with the Wolverine, you know, much more grounded and realistic. And I think really liked what Garrett presented with the design that he, you know, led and created for X-Men Apocalypse. And so then here we are, we were on Logan, you know, refining that and doing that. And yeah, it's a great movie for sure. That was a great experience. Very hard, just because of, again, finding the challenges of all these nuances we're trying to present that were not superhero tropes, were very much based, again, in Western themes and very lone wolf kind of characters, and then finding the humanity behind them, you know, for everything. So they did feel real. So the action wasn't all of a sudden, oh, we have this serious movie, now we're doing this grandiose, bombastic action. It's like, no, we have to fit it in the world and the characters, and we have to make people feel the impact of, you know, these movements, because even though this person is human, he has a special ability that can definitely, you know, hurt so many people. So people should understand it's not a video game, you know, it's very much, what would happen if this guy went loose? And this is why this guy is constantly suppressing himself to not break loose. So yeah, that was tough, but it was great. I mean, the movie speaks for itself, you know, that's all I can say.
And yeah, that sort of Western connection there in terms of genre, stroke of genius, especially because at that point, the superhero genre had taken off so much. So you could really start to play with that formula and those tropes. But I remember seeing that opening fight scene with the limousine, and it was just so badass seeing Wolverine actually unload on some people, actually using his claws the way that someone might actually use them if someone like Logan were to have those abilities. What was it like working on a Wolverine project that was rated R, where you could really let loose with that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, it was like a dream, right? Like, even doing X-Men Apocalypse in a way was kind of a dream. Like, that's kind of what I was telling Steve when we were working on it. It's like, you know, if you would have told me 10 years ago, I'd have been working on the last Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman. Because I remember seeing X-Men, you know, in 99, going to the theaters and seeing it and growing up on the X-Men animated series. And it's like, no, there's no way, you know, like, I would have told you, you know, you're lying. Like, what are you kidding me? I'm going to go work with Hugh Jackman, you know, like, no. But of course, it's like, to work with a character like that is incredible and amazing, and working with so many amazing people. And yeah, exactly. It's like being challenged to not have this mindset of, oh, he's a superhero, let's let him be super. It's like, well, that's not the point of the story. You know, how do we bridge that gap? Right? Kind of like what Dark Knight did for Batman. It's like, how do we bridge that gap so this everyone understands that this is a person who just so happens to be this kind of person, you know? So yeah, I would say for sure in the top 10 experiences of my career thus far, a fantastic film to be on and experience with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And Marvel especially, I feel like any Stanley properties, really, mm-hmm. really good at, you know, bringing the superhero aspect down to that human level. Yeah. If it's X-Men or Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, anyone like that. Mm-hmm. And another scene that really sticks out to me is that refinery assault where you have the bad guys coming in trying to take Laura or X-23. Mm-hmm. And just seeing Laura doing all these flips and crazy, crazy slashes and things like that.
Yeah.
What is it like choreographing or doing previs for someone who is just physically a lot smaller and shorter than everyone else there?
I mean, that was a huge challenge, you know, like, because technically the character is supposed to be around the same age that Daphne was, around like 11 or 12 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, again, someone who's trying to understand their body, but then, right, we would, you know, Steve and I would be developing these moves with the team that were like people of our sizes, you know, like between 5'8 to 5'9, like 150, 170 pounds. And then Garrett would be like, no, you fools, it's like this, you know? And, but it makes sense because you kind of forget like, oh, if I do a movement, how does this little girl do it? But at the same time, exactly, Garrett was so big about using her size, her speed, the fact that she has, you know, claws on her hands and feet, and even like the reveals and things like that. Like, when do we reveal the foot claw? How do we reveal it? You know, when, how do we show her as opposed to Logan, who's a little more direct and straightforward, you know, not just because of his experience, but also because he's older. He's not going to fuck around and do all these, you know, big laborious movements because it tires him out. Whereas her, she's a machine. She can flip and do all these things. So it was a big challenge to kind of find the levels, especially when they work together at the end. Like, what are the levels? How do they set each other up that feels right? Because also Garrett was big about at the end, they shouldn't feel like this magically fully fledged team, you know, like, oh, they're working together. They've all of a sudden known each other for years. He's like, well, no, they've only known each other for a few days, but they also understand each other by now. So there has to be a teamwork, but it has to feel natural and it has to feel real and shouldn't take people out of the movie all of a sudden because now magically they've teamed up. You know, like, they shouldn't be doing this big Jackie Chan-esque fight, all of a sudden know how to do something like that because, you know, whatever, they're the team up characters. It's like, no, they both know their missions. They should understand each other. And again, I think that was super smart of him to always keep it grounded, but always understand at what point where the story is, you know, so we can, each scene really has an impact, you know, depending on where the story point is.
Right. And I know you already mentioned, you know, it's crazy that this was Hugh Jackman's last X-Men movie. It was also Sir Patrick Stewart's last X-Men movie. Yeah. His final scene being with X-24 coming out and having to battle Logan, you know, Hugh Jackman, the real Hugh Jackman, I guess. So what is that process like when you're trying to choreograph someone against their younger self? I know you already mentioned the age factor in Logan. Is there some sort of real character or characterization that you're keeping in mind for that process?
Yeah. Garrett really spearheaded the idea that X-24 is an animal, right? Like, if Logan is an animal, he's learned over time his animal instincts don't have to necessarily be taken literally, right? Like, he's learned to be a person over time. And so he technically has a person's conscience. But Garrett was like, well, X-24 is literally Logan without any of that conscience whatsoever. A fully grown animal, you know, that you think could be controlled, but ultimately is not controlled, right? The moment this person goes, they go. And because they don't have the weakness that Logan currently has, that's even more terrifying in that way. Once this person reacts and takes impact and things like that, he's not going to react like Logan, who's now older and can feel pain or can also understand that his body's not going to move the way it does anymore. So that was a big thing setting up that scene. Like, Garrett was almost saying it should be like a horror film in that farmhouse. Like, this person should come. And then once you see him kind of take out the armors, you're like, oh shit. And then once you see Logan come and unload on this guy, and then, you know, X-24 just responds by impaling him and throwing him. It's like, yeah, that's it. This guy shouldn't have to do all these other moves back to him. He should just literally take the damage, get him and just put him down. And then that, now he's on top of him, you know, now he's this unbridled animal force. So that was really cool to, to work with and develop. And we did a lot of R&D on that, but definitely I thought that was great of Garrett to immediately have that contrast of like, what if this entity really is Logan, but without the conscience, right? Almost like a robot, this animalistic person. And immediately that shaped us into terms of like, oh, okay, we can keep the idea of this clone character, but at the same time, this person's still a person, right? We want people to feel that he is a terror. So by the end, exactly, you're like, oh, how is he going to take him down? You know, we've already seen this guy be a Terminator, more or less. How is he going to, you know, finally defeat him?
Yeah, and from a of more, I guess, practical filmmaking perspective for that scene too, I remember seeing some VFX breakdowns of what they did for that film, and it seems like there was a double used for Hugh Jackman for the younger version for X-24 that was then, you know, CGI'd over or masked over. Yes. Were there any practical considerations that you took when you were actually planning out the choreography and things like that?
Yes, we did. Garrett was actually very big on, if we were to reveal X-24 literally, to not have a two-shot right away. Like, even though we as choreographers and coordinators, you know, Steve and I were like, oh, it'd be so cool if like we see the scene where, you know, Logan is just ripping into him and then eventually he stabs him and we cut in for, you know, the big stunt throw. If we kind of saw from a wider shot, like just seeing Logan in all his glory, and immediately Garrett was like, no, don't do that. Here's why. And we're like, oh, but it makes sense because exactly, you only see the character when he comes down the stairs. Logan's kind of like, oh shit. And then once you go into the fight, you let him rip after obviously he's seen that Charles is dead. You let him rip on it and you only cut over the shoulder, right? So then by the time you build the fight, you can then, now the audience understands the illusion, right? Now you can actually expand what the audience is seeing. And so that was really cool of Garrett to teach us that, like build up to those moments. And then let it go, because not just for audience sake, but production will also help you, right, with that. And then you'll understand why you're expanding on it. It's like you're building to that apex moment again, that moment of once he's down, you know, we created the moment of like the claws coming in and Logan stopping them. And once he rips out and gets out of that, now it's X-24's turn. And by then you've already seen what this guy can kind of do with the farmers. And once he rips, it's like, oh man, you know, you just let him in. Go nuts, and that's always cool. So yeah.
Yes, it is always cool.
You know, just having these ideas, like we're all here stuck trying to do moves of like, oh, this would be cool. We'd fuck him up like this. And Garrett's like, yeah, that's great. Anyway, so do it like this and then try to figure out what you guys thought. And we're like, oh, okay. Thanks, sir.
And of course the whole film coming to, you know, a very somber end, a somber note at the end, with it being the death of Logan and Hugh Jackman's last stand with the character. So for that final fight scene, it, you know, obviously it's huge. It's in several movements. There's all these different planes of action happening. Is there anything that's done differently or even any just added pressure knowing that you're building up to this huge emotional beat that isn't just the climax of this film, but the climax of an entire film franchise and, you know, character history and legacy here?
Oh, I'm sure, of course. You know, again, I really think it speaks to what helped us the most keep staying centered is having this Western motif, right? It's like the gunslinger's last stand. So we kind of very much thought it that way. And Garrett was very big on that. Like, don't get swayed by the fan base or don't get swayed by Marvel's, I guess just overall fan base. It's like, we will of course cater to them and they will be excited, but he was very much like Mangold, like let's continue to make this character human. And then everyone's gonna get behind it. If we get so stuck on like, oh, what are the fan base going to think? Then I think we will immediately limit ourselves. Right. Or we will think of a, not a cop out, but I guess just a very fan centric way to end it. So I think that's what really helped building to that last scene. And so they ended up doing it, like I said, Garrett and Steve went to Chama to do that scene. I wasn't physically there at the time, but even building to that final fight, that was very much, you know, let's look at every fight, let's look at what point Logan's at with X-23 and then X-24. And so by the end, right, how does that compare from the first fight with X-24 compared to, at that point we called the little oneer Logan's run, but you know, it's like, how does that show, right? It's like, he's taking the serum. He's all jacked up. He just did all this crazy action with her. But then now he's like, oh shit, the serum's gone. You know, like, what do we do? He's even worse than where he was in the first fight. Uh-huh. So again, it's showing those levels of like, he knows he's going to die, but how do we show that? How do we convey that through this, what feels like a futile battle? So yeah, I felt like within the time frame and the context that we did, again, just having that idea of a gunfighter's last stand really cemented our approach from there.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned before, sometimes there's studios or external influences sort of maybe tampering or pushing the artistic vision or the integrity of it. I think sometimes studios will underestimate audiences. I think anyone who's ever connected with Hugh Jackman as his character, or anyone who has any, you know, human experience with having someone look up to them, is able to relate to this story and really feel that ending with the emotional impact that it has. It's that well done that I think you can just assume that audiences would connect with it. And I think they really did.
I agree. You know, at the time, I think just because I was so into the work, I didn't really know the weight of what we were creating and presenting. You know what I mean? Sometimes that happens when you're kind of day in and day out developing and designing things. But yeah, when I saw the film with my wife, it definitely was like, whoa, we did that. You know, like the team did that. And I think that's what made it that much more amazing, is not just the fact that the team, of course, did a great kick-ass job, but that audiences saw that work and saw it behind the context of what was happening for the character, you know? So by the time it ends, it really resonated beyond the action. You know, they were invested all the way through. And I think to be on a project like that, especially like you're saying, for a superhero, I think it speaks to that, right? It's like, it's a shame the film didn't get nominated for more things, but I would put it up there with something like The Dark Knight, in the sense of like, it's two different aspects of a similar genre, but they both tell a very human version of each of those aspects, you know? And I feel like people forget that. And that's even why people love comic books, for example. Of course, we love the fantasy aspect and we love the escapism of it. But I think why a lot of people resonate towards comic books and graphic novels is because you can have very adult themes that resonate with all audiences, you know, as opposed to just an adult audience or just a child audience. You have a lot of very adult themes that can feel real, and you remember that these people are technically human. They just happen to have these very special or unique abilities. So yeah, to see how that film did beyond that, I mean, it hasn't changed much, obviously, for the superhero genre, but I would hope that another film does something like that in a way, you know, to see a more grounded approach in that sense, whether it be serious or not. I think it's a great way to approach it.
Yeah, there was definitely an emotional connection there. I think one of the other works that we were a big fan of, we wanted to jump into, was also Gemini Man. I'm kind of wondering what that process was like of choreographing some of those scenes. And I'm wondering if, like, what if one actor is fighting and the other one's like CGI, and you kind of put them together, like, what kind of fighting styles were involved when putting together this kind of scene?
Well, at the time, Jeremy Marinus, the fight coordinator, and the other fight choreographer, because I helped him prep it in LA, and then they went to do the movie in Atlanta and then in Budapest. In the beginning, you know, Aang is very hands-on, and I had done a film with Aang called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, and I helped design the, there's a very little skirmish in that film, which the character Billy Lynn is having a flashback to when his commanding officer gets shot. He has to protect him. And then this insurgent comes out and he has to defend his commanding officer and himself, you know, against the insurgent. Anyway, he eventually kills him and realizes the insurgent is, you know, probably no older or younger than him. You know, Billy's supposed to be like 17 years old, 18 years old, right out of high school. And in that approach, I feel like Aang took a very similar thing with Gemini Man, where he really wanted the martial arts and the fighting to be realistic. But at the same time, that's also like what you said, right? It's like, if there is a person that is 20 years younger, who technically doesn't have any of the flaws physically that this character has, how would that person fight against an older version of himself who has all the experience in the world, but now has to obviously fight with a handicap, right? And to think outside of the box in terms of fighting this person head on, because if he fights him head on, obviously he will lose if he, you know, takes him all head on, but his experience will trump that. So how do we show that in the fight? And that was very much a difficult challenge to do because of the 3D cameras. You know, the rig weighed like 300 pounds. They had to put it on like a jib or something to suspend it at times because it was a massive unit. You know, it's two cameras put together. And then also because of the 3D cameras field of perspective, what you normally would consider a stacked punch couldn't be done right because it would not look stacked. It would look very far away, or the depth of field would not correlate to what a stack would look like, no matter how close you got. So I think there was a funny story that the coordinator, JJ Perry, told me where I think Aang had even suggested like, oh, what if we hit them? And JJ's like, I don't think anyone wants to do a fight where they just get punched in the face repeatedly. Maybe we can find a different way to figure it out, you know? But Aang was great to, you know, for the brief time that we prepped it, he was very hands-on, very articulate with his notes, which was awesome. And yeah, I think his overall approach was much more like, how do we show the contrast and the difference between these two characters, even though they are technically the same? And then when they get to, you know, the ending, how do we again show that evolution between the fighting and whatnot? I liked the movie for what it was. I saw it, you know, but I know at the time there was a lot of struggle with the technology and kind of incorporating that into stunts because, again, we're trying to figure out how to have this fantastical action scene with our traditional methods, but also bridge the gap with 3D technology. And at the same time, still keep it emotionally content. So there's a lot of new things implemented into the old things.
Right.
So
I know Aang was really trying to push a lot of the technology on this film.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of nuance was sadly a little lost overall, just because the technology, again, is so new.
Yeah.
And I can't really say as to, you know, what that was, but I feel like it's still a great experiment to see, you know what I mean? It's like somebody has to do it. And someone like Aang, you know, I thought he did for what the movie was a great job for what it is. And, you know, we'll, I guess, just see if the technology sticks is really what it boils down to it, you know, but yeah, to do again, my brief time just helping prep that film just shaped again, working with these kinds of directors like a Mangold or an Ang Lee, shaped my vision of design as well, because it's much less about the movement. It's much more about how do we have that intention with the movement, plus the technology involved, you know, how do we make it feel real at the same time? So cool movie to be on, you know, too bad it just wasn't.
And we need those projects definitely that are pushing the way we do things around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I know for the scene, the chase scene between Will Smith and Will Smith, between him and Junior. There's a lot of parts of this movie with not just hand-to-hand fighting, but also some firefights. So what are some big differences in your head when you're going into, you know, planning out those two different types of fight scenes?
I think for me personally, I always like to have an element of grounded reality, you know, and JJ Perry has a great quote. He says, you know, it's like reality plus 10%, right? And what he means by that is if you have a basis for a realistic fight scene, let's add 10% exaggeration. So that way it's still entertaining, but it's not ultra realistic unless that's what the story needs to call. So for example, with a gunfight, you know, real gunfights are over extremely fast. And much like a real knife fight, the intention is to not get into a drawn out thing. The intention is to immediately subdue whatever you're having to face. But then that wouldn't be cinematically fun or entertaining. So, right. It's like finding the tools to figure out smart ways, you know, to elongate the firefight, which still feels smart and also still feel tactically and practically realistic, right? How would this person go and cover? How would this person respond to whatever is being taken, whether it be a level change, a height, environment? What would the person continue to do or want to do? And then in terms of this character, because he's older and has more experience, it's like, well, how would this person think, oh, if the younger version is going to do this, what would I do in this moment or have done to other people similar to me, you know, to find different methods of doing. And I think it really helps. It's like what Chad always says, right? The only way to fake being good is to be good. So thankful to JJ has a military background, you know, and he's been in actual live firefights. So it's like having that literal experience helps of like, okay, at this point, try this, at this point, do that, you know, and it helps us as choreographers or designers to remind ourselves, you know, if you really want to know more about guns, go and shoot and learn about guns. You know, if you want to learn what it feels like to engage with weaponry and gear, go and learn what that is or have a sense of it. So when you go and choreograph, you're understanding what not only you're putting yourself through, but what the actor is eventually going to put themselves through, because they're going to lean on you, you know, 9 times out of 10, even if they have experience doing that. I mean, you know, look at someone like Tom Cruise. It's like, there's a reason why Tom Cruise leans heavily on his stunt team. He's done so much in his career, but he's still not going to not lean on his stunt team, because those are the guys and gals that are going to take all their experiences and education and help him bridge that gap, you know, to an audience. So it's like the more you know and understand the approaches to different things like guns, because there's differences between a handgun, a rifle, a shotgun. There's different types of rifles, different types of handguns, different types of ammunition. The ways the ammunition goes out, just like a technique of a punch, right? You have an open hand, a closed hand, different angles and directions and things like that. So it's very similar in that respect. It's like, if you go and approach it and have a taste for it, then you can exaggerate it and it'll still feel real. You know, you can have fun with it even and break the rules, because you at least know where it comes from. So I feel like that only makes you a better designer to have experiences like that.
Yeah. And I always find it interesting how it seems like in, you know, Western styles, a lot of the times they'll sort of just portray that quickly and visually in a way that you might almost miss it if you're not really paying attention to the action. And then if you look over at certain Eastern styles, like especially anime, they'll really take a whole beat, talk it out, and make sure you understand the mechanics of the action that's going down.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's really cool to find a balance of that, because I agree. I think sometimes it's okay to gloss it over depending on the moment, but exactly. Sometimes I think it's okay to slow it down and let your audience in on the trick with you. You know what I mean? Don't give it away, but right. Let them in on it so they can appreciate the moment. Like, oh man, you know, it's cool. Same thing with like a sword draw of a katana, you know, or a reveal of a knife or something like that. It's like, sometimes I think it's okay to slow it down a little bit so the audience can catch up, and then you can continue on the same rhythm or path you're going.
And, you know, one thing I've got to ask about the scene where we're using a motorcycle as a melee weapon to like swing it at your opponent. Are you into vehicles? Are you into motorcycles or anything? How did that work out?
Well, I myself didn't design that. That's designed by JJ Perry and then his assistant or co-coordinator, Justin Yu. And then they worked with, you know, some of the top car guys in the business to really figure out the mechanics of that scene. Because that's, again, another thing, right? Is like JJ is fine with the scene being exaggerated. But if you're going to do the real chase in the real streets, we need to know what that feels like. We need to know how it's actually going to go, because a motorcycle is different from a car, right? The guts and mechanics are slightly different than handling an actual vehicle. And it's much different than putting a weapon in your hand as opposed to putting 100 plus pounds, you know, in your body. That goes away. You're now talking about lives being lost potentially, you know, because, okay, you hit someone on the head, of course, not willing that on anybody, but that's much different than landing a motorcycle on them. You know, so the mechanics of all these things. So yeah, JJ and Justin really worked together with the team, and they put together that whole sequence, you know, and figuring out the mechanics. But definitely they said it was tough to figure out, because true to Aang's style, even though he wanted it exaggerated, he did ask, well, what would happen if this guy got hit with this motorcycle? What would happen? How would we visually and accurately, you know, spin this motorcycle at this point? So it feels physically real, but at the same time is safe, but at the same time is exciting. So that's for sure a really hard challenge to anyone that does, you know, vehicle stunts, is that I think people forget when you do fight scenes, it's not that it's harder or easier, but I would say production-wise it's easier, because it's just people and other people fighting, right? Even if you add certain elements or environment. But the moment you add a moving physical vehicle of any kind, that is still pure aluminum and steel flying at someone, flying in space through something. So if you don't have it figured out, beyond the base mechanics, and then you want to exaggerate or, right, you know, change some things to make it look more cinematically appealing.
Mm-hmm.
The car only goes so fast and can only be handled so much. So you really have to figure out all your ABC points to make sure everyone's safe, everyone knows what's happening, production knows what's happening, the streets are locked off. And especially if you're going to do that practically, because if you do it visually, of course, oh, we'll shoot a plate, we'll get the car VFX this way. But if you want to do it like Mission Impossible, where Cruise is mostly doing that for real, that is a lot of effort and huge team collaboration to make sure that is ultimately safe, because that's why it feels real, because it is, you know, you can't fake it.
Yeah. And we just talked to Kier Beck about a lot about Mad Max Fury Road, which is just about all moving vehicles and gunning it down the desert.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and
I'm wondering how much of it is like the physics, like the calculations behind it.
A lot of it, definitely. A lot of it. Because you can't just wing it. You know what I mean? Like, I could probably count on one hand the stunt guys and gals that if you wanted them to, maybe could wing it. You know what I'm saying? Because even those like expert people will still tell you, I think we should rehearse, you know, or if you really want me to do that, I can only do it to this mark, to this degree, how fast it's going to go, because they know the car, right? It's like giving someone a weapon, let's say in Wushu, and you're like, can you make the staff bend this way? Or can you make the whip go this way? It's like, yes and no, you know, like, yes, this way, no, that way.
Okay.
And like, why? And you're like, well, because of these reasons, you know, like, this is safer because X, Y, Z. This is not safe because I have no control over X, Y, Z. You know, and it's very similar with the car. It's, I can only go so fast to a certain point because if you don't have the right tires, if the insides are not calibrated right, correctly, a lot of times most picture cars are not, you know, they just kind of give you a car, right? It's like someone handing you a prop weapon and you're like, all right, have fun. I don't know if this is safe, you know, like.
You got to test it out.
You got to test it. You got to figure it out. And then, you know, the life of that vehicle too, sometimes, because that's a lot of damage to the vehicle internally, doing all the drifts, doing all the different stop points and turns and hitting the marks. Your tires burn out. The guts eventually wear out. It's like constantly running your computer at max at short bursts. Eventually, all the guts, you know, so
exactly. It's going to work. Yeah.
Having testing and proving of vehicle work is a whole another level. So that's something eventually I would love to learn more about. Because of course, learning how to have fight scenes within those kind of vehicles, learning how the vehicles operate so the fight feels real, but also the vehicle work feels real and, you know, is hand in hand, like what they did in Gemini Man. Yeah, I would love to learn more about it for sure.
Yeah. And let me just also give a quick shout out to that Catacombs fight scene, because as a big MMA fan myself, seeing those two go from striking to then clinching a whole lot and seeing a lot of those more intricate little reversals, like at one point someone's getting picked up, but he's able to interlace his leg to his opponent's leg a little bit to stop from being picked up. Loved all of it. Fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's all, you know, kudos to Jeremy laying a lot of those moments down. And, you know, Jeremy himself being a jiu-jitsu practitioner and myself just having dabbled in judo and, you know, more stand-up Japanese jiu-jitsu, it's like, Jeremy's great at finding all of those really cool moments and giving them flair. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like Jeremy has an amazing way of really bringing out the flair and a lot of the traditional martial arts techniques. So I thought that's great. And then just coupled with the way we kind of presented the way to shoot it, you know, it's made it what it is. So yeah, it's awesome.
It was awesome. It was awesome. And I wanted to ask you real quick too. I know we're going a little bit long here, so we're going to, I think, begin to close up pretty soon. But I know you also worked on a certain Batman property, a game, Batman's Telltale Studios game. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know a little bit about what it's like doing choreo for an interactive medium like that, where there really is some player input to take into consideration.
That was actually a really cool thing because, you know, we didn't do traditional motion capture, like what you normally see with a lot of AAA games, because Telltale Games was such a independent studio, even though they had really obviously major properties from Warner Brothers. Their approach was, well, we're looking for reference movement, right? To kind of facilitate the fights. And then like storyboard animators, they will by hand animate and cherry pick the moments they want to show. But I think normally they did like really small motion capture pieces or really small like reference, kind of shooting on your iPhone, run through it like a master, you know, really simple for them. And the approach that myself and Vlad had presented to them is a feature film approach because, you know, we noticed a lot of their games are really feature film based.
Right.
In the sense that they have a great overarching story and, you know, they have seasons and it's cut up. So we were like, hey, you know, we can... if you give us the full scene and you tell us more or less the direction you really want to go, like a director would, we can then present you with the scene back and you can cherry pick the player moments. Initially, we kind of picked it for them, but then over time, we thought it would be better that they find the moments within themselves and know which ones they want to really expound upon, you know, from there. So it was great. I mean, working with that company was amazing. You know, they never were like, oh, Batman has to be like this or really like that. You know, they had their overarching angles they wanted to do for each season and what they wanted to do for the characters, but they really gave us a lot of freedom and a lot of, you know, input to bring in to the style. And we had a blast all the time. You know, we shot in this little room at this gym called Joining All Movement, which is run by another great coordinator, Travis Wong. And I mean, I want to say the studio room is probably like, I don't know, 20 by 15, if even. It's really tiny, you know, and we just constantly made that room into everything and everything, you know, but yeah, it was great. You know, again, working with Vlad, doing two seasons of that and getting a bunch of our friends to just play dress up and, you know, be Batman and just be the rogue gallery characters, which is awesome, you know, and Telltale really loved that.
Dream.
Brought like this whole attention to detail, you know, to all these characters and stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I'd love to do it again if they did a season three, you know, here's hoping.
Yeah, hopefully. And on top of all that, I saw a very prominent sort of a Thai plum clinch in that bar fight scene. I appreciated that very much.
Of course. Yeah. We, you know, I think with Vlad and I, we just kind of thought like Batman had his cinematic style, of course. And even the one with Batman versus Superman, but we were like, you know what, if this Batman is like in his middle years, we really took inspiration from the animated series, you know, and just really were like, what if we grounded this kind of semi-pseudo karate, Muay Thai, maybe judo style, you know, and just implemented all these different factors and things and made him less, not brutal, but I guess just very hard edge and efficient, you know, like a, very much like a karateka. And it was cool to kind of play with that old school aspect again. I think Telltale appreciated that too, you know, for their medium.
Yeah, and I think it all melded together really well as well. And speaking of, you know, these sort of maybe nerdier properties, I believe you were involved with another project called Mario Warfare. Is that right?
Yeah, really, really way back. Yeah, with
Rocket Jump.
Well,
or
actually,
that one was...
I was involved in two ones. But Mario Warfare was... there was a director in North Carolina named Micah Moore. And he was an indie guy, independent filmmaker that was just, you know, kind of doing his own thing with his own group. I think it was called Beatdown Boogie was the group at the time. And he was doing, like, they did this one where they merged Call of Duty and Metal Gear put together. And then they did Mario Warfare. And I came out to play, like, Waluigi for a week or so initially. But they had a lot of... different budget things and schedule changes. So eventually I had to be replaced by Eric Jacobus because I believe I was on, I forget what project, I think I was either on Divergent or something just after that at the time. So I couldn't go back out to help do it. But yeah, I mean, Mike is great and a lot of those independent guys are awesome to work with and he's got such a really cool visual style. I think he's in Atlanta helping other stunt performers you know, kind of shoot vizzes and do little side projects and stuff. So, but it was an awesome experience to be a part of.
Yeah, Rocket Jump and Beatdown Boogie, both very close to my heart, very near and dear to me.
Yeah, Rocket Jump was also cool. That's thanks to Eric Linden, who's part of a stunt group, Action Factory. And Eric was great bringing me on when they did that Hulu show. And just even doing that fight was super fun because that was kind of the basis, right? Is like, what if this assassin chick was just trying to have a regular date, you know, like find a conflict in that. And then they presented a really great fight and I just came in and helped with the viz and just helped with some of the ideas to do with that. And yeah, anytime Eric has brought me on any Rocket Jump stuff, it's been like really fun and ridiculous, and we have a blast doing it. So yeah,
that's so awesome.
Yeah, Michael Lear was telling us a little bit about it too.
Yeah, it was both times.
Great stuff. Michael, great stuff
there, and yeah, it's always fun working with Mike too. I know he had referred me to your guys, so of course, thank you to Michael Lear. And it's always great hearing him. I was just hearing a little bit of the cast right before I got onto here. Mike has been great. I've just been very lucky to be with other guys similar to his background, where, you know, they come from an independent level and we all just kind of struggle to make ends meet and figure out this whole business. Mm-hmm. And then it's really cool to see, obviously, him having great success with Extraction and now Fast Nine and other coordinators. You know, we're all kind of working and being on different productions. So I think it's awesome for all my homies to just be doing what they're doing.
100%. Yeah. And I think the last thing we wanted to touch on was kind of like your future projects. Just very briefly, I know you're working on Harry Haft. Yeah, if you could just probably talk about that a little bit and trying to, what was like your experience and what are you kind of looking forward for the audience to see in the film?
That movie is very special to me just because of, not just because of the content obviously involved, because it's a World War II, you know, based film. And it's obviously about dealing with the Holocaust and PTSD involving this real person named Harry Haft. But just being able to work closely with an actor like Ben Foster, being able to work closely with a director like Barry Levinson was, I mean, that was like a masterclass in filmmaking. Just being around those two great teachers of cinema, you know, Barry being as much older as he is was just very kind and collaborative. And, you know, I would love to direct like him any day, just the way he handled the set and just the way he would approach his approach to directing was amazing to see in person. And then, you know, Ben as well, just such an amazing committed actor to do the things that he did, because, you know, every time Ben would rehearse, it was very slow and methodical. And initially myself and the other fight coordinator, Khalid, we kind of were like, I hope he looks good, you know, when he does the fights, because he was like rehearsing super, super, super slow. But what was great about that and what really helped me watching that and then seeing it live in person was that he was doing that to just, you know, get his reps in. And then on the day being in character, because he's a method actor, being in character in the moment, seeing it all come to life, it's like, oh, I see. And that's fantastic. You know, like you're purposely training the idea of the movement and not literally going hard unless you have to, and just letting it breathe from there. And that way you can organically let it contract and expand, you know, if we need to, which I thought was a fantastic approach. And it really, you know, showed me a lot. But yeah, I actually saw a little bit of the film, just like a really, really brief, small little things of it that my, whatchamacallit, that my boss, Clayton Barber, who's the coordinator on that film, he, you know, was just very nice enough to show me just very little tiny bits of the movie. But it looks amazing. I'm really, really stoked whenever that film decides to come out. It really looks really cool. The boxing is very, it's not boxing, is really what I'll say. It's just very, you know, equivocal of that time of 1940s boxing. You know, if you go on YouTube and look up a 1940s boxing fight, there's no boxing. It's just hitting, you know, it's just because that was the time of that time. There was not really much technique, you know. It wasn't until someone like a Rocky Marciano and a couple of other pockets of gentlemen fighting very specific kinds of styles changed the game slightly. But beyond that, it was just put your head down and swing for the fences, you know, and to do that for a real life person who technically had documented fights on paper, but not filmed, was a very daunting task. And then at the same time, to do that realistically and safely, you know, where you just come in and there's not really, it's not Creed, you know, there's no combos, it's not even Rocky. Just these two guys are punching at the same time, trying to connect. And sometimes they do, and they're still punching, you know? So how do we do that safely and effectively? But I feel like we did it justice in that sense, you know, because it's a much more emotional film as opposed to a Rocky film or, you know, like a Creed. I would say it's more in line with like Cinderella Man in that sense.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to it. It's interesting to me too. There seems to be a little connection between boxing and World War II, between Harry Haft and Joe Lewis. I had one last question before Darren comes in and wraps things up. So I know you and Michael Lee are, of course, friend of the show, very good friends. But not to start anything here, but if you two had to fight, who would win?
Michael Lee.
Okay, that was easy.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, it's, I always tell people it's like this, right? It's like, I am like 150, like 5'8", right? Michael's like 5'10", you know, 170, 180. Mm. It doesn't really matter how much you know. It's like, go look at old UFC, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you put people in a phone booth and give them something or their bare hands, at a certain point, if someone doesn't strike right away and commits and finds the thing, it's going to be a battle. And at that point, like animals, it's really about who is bigger. It's just fact.
Mm.
Because you can, even if, let's say I win, if I had to fight Michael Lair again, you know what I mean? It's like, it's the same kind of thing. It's just war of attrition at that point, you know? And that's the thing, is you both have to be willing to commit that far to even go. But even if you did, I mean, how many times have you seen in, you know, UFC like 1-3, one guy comes in, bam, just out immediately, you know, and just done. And they're, you know, one guy could be huge and one guy could be smaller, vice versa. And it just, it's, hey, that's life, right? So that's what I always say. It's like, if you ever have to, put it this way, if you ever had to fight anyone for real, you wouldn't say anything, you would just do it. And that's that. And if you're already arguing about it, just walk away. It's not worth it. It's really not, you know? So that's what I always tell everyone. It's really
coming
not
in worth with it. That wisdom one more time at the end.
Well, thank you, Emmanuel, for coming to the podcast. We really, really appreciate your time, man. Where can people find you?
I just have an Instagram, which is my name, Emmanuel Manzanares.